Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
It a little bit harkens back to the kind of rural old times where you help your neighbor out. You know, your tractor's broke down. Well, I can borrow your piece of equipment. You know, I've had that happen at my farm before.
Megan Hutchison and the local Growers Guild are all about cooperation amongst farmers. She's here talking about how the LGG gives small Indiana farmers a leg up. Renting farmland instead of buying outright, Harvest Public Media looks into this trend. Broccoli is joined by anchovies and gorgonzola cheese in Chef Daniel Orr's Tuscan salad recipe. We visit a meeting of the B-Town Food Swappers and serving seafood in a restaurant hundreds of miles away from where the fish are caught. Candace and Jeff Finch talk about meeting customers' expectations while not compromising on their food philosophy. Food insecurity, food deserts are the topics of two of our news stories this week. Luann Johnson starts off with a story about food safety.
Nearly 9 million pounds of beef have been recalled after the Food Safety and Inspection Services have deemed it unfit for human consumption. Rancho Feeding Corporation of Petaluma, California, processed diseased animals and did not submit proper inspections. The meat was then sent to distribution centers in California, Florida, Illinois, and Texas. Though no reports of illness have been submitted in conjunction with the recall, FSIS believes that consumption of the beef could result in, quote, serious adverse health consequences or death, unquote. Find a link to the USDA's news release, which indicates a complete list of recalled products at eartheats.org. Despite recent efforts to introduce fresh produce to low-income neighborhoods, where fast food restaurants far outnumber grocery stores, changing dietary behavior requires more than simply providing access to healthy foods. In a study by the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, researchers interviewed residents in a low-income Philadelphia neighborhood where a new grocery store opened. The study found that only one quarter of the residents regularly shopped at the store 6 months after its opening, disappointing advocates of, if you build it, they will come. The grocery store opened with funding from the Healthy Food Financing Initiative of 2010, a national effort to supply fresh produce to areas in short supply. Modeled after a program launched in Pennsylvania in 2004, the Healthy Food Financing Initiative provides incentives to grocery stores opening in food deserts, low-income neighborhoods where a lack of healthy food options corresponds with high rates of obesity, diabetes, and high blood pressure. In addition to making healthy foods more available, some claim that education about how to prepare those foods is needed. UCLA has launched a project that provides cooking demonstrations and educational posters in areas of East Los Angeles. Feedback has been positive, but it is still too early to tell whether the program is making any statistically significant impact. And this year's extreme winter weather just won't quit. Schools are forced to delay or cancel classes, which is leaving some low-income students without food. The USDA's Food and Nutrition Service reports that last year, more than 21 million children nationwide ate free or reduced-priced lunches. That's 70% of the total students who ate school lunches. So what happens to those kids when school is not in session? NPR's Jessica Glazer talks to school administrators in Iowa, Maryland, and Vermont to learn more. Find a link to that story on our website, eartheats.org.
We're on Twitter and Facebook, too. Search for Earth Eats. Three stories from our news reporters this week, brought to us by Luann Johnson.
See you in a week.
The price of farmland in the Midwest has skyrocketed in recent years, thanks mostly to high prices for big commodity crops like corn and soybeans. Farm prices are too high for many farmers to buy in, which has many going for rentals. Farmers pay a landlord and rent out land so they can plant their crops. But with the price of corn expected to free fall this year, many farmers are considering the cost of renting and planting this season. Harvest Public Media's Peter Gray reports.
Farmers put a lot of money into their operations. After buying a $500,000 combine, they want to harvest as many acres as they can get their hands on. And across the Corn Belt, that's meant that many farmers have been paying neighboring landowners a premium to cash rent That is a contract where the landlord and tenant farmer agree to a fixed price per acre. Gary Schnittke, who tracks farmland rentals at the University of Illinois, says they are critical to grain farming and the rural economy.
Most farmers want to farm more than they can own. They don't have the financial resources to buy that land, so they rent land from others.
We're hauling corn out now, moving corn. This is a good time of the year to start moving our corn, cleaning our bins out.
Tim Seifert farms south of Springfield, Illinois, and negotiates with more than a dozen landlords each year. According to the USDA, cash rents in this area reach nearly $400 per acre. That's about four times the median lease price for non-irrigated farmland in the Corn Belt. Seifert says it's worth it due to the productivity of the soil.
This ground is very rich. It's deep. There's places that you can go 20, 40 miles south of here that the topsoil is only 24 inches, where we've got almost 4 foot of good topsoil.
Corn hit a record high at over $8 per bushel in 2012. With corn expected to remain closer to $4 per bushel this year, growers who cash rent will have to negotiate their leases down or risk major losses.
I think the roller coaster ride's over. I think we're going to have to tighten our belts, and I think everybody down the line has realized that now.
Tim Seifert's neighbor, Gary Niemeyer, a fellow farmer and former president of the National Corn Growers Association, puts it this way.
As you listen to the stock market and stuff, you hear about all these bubbles. This is probably a bubble in prices that are not here now. We don't have $8 corn. We don't have $15,000 an acre farmland, yet we're cash renting like we did.
The average value of cropland in corn country like Illinois and Iowa is about three times higher than it was a decade ago. That boom has pushed up cash rents, which farmers have been willing to pay because they've been getting high returns for their crops. But retired Iowa State University economist William Edwards says anyone relying on farmland income should do some careful math in 2014.
I think owners are quite willing to listen and look at how those things have changed, but it helps to actually lay out the numbers and get a better idea of what the possible returns are for the next year.
On his farm in central Illinois, Tim Seifert says prosperous years have allowed him to make investments in new equipment, but he sees that changing in the years to come as farmers who rent hold back on big purchases.
Of course, when machinery sales drop, that has a rippling effect through Waterloo and Moline and the places, even through GM and Ford. Farmers stop buying pickup trucks again, you know what I mean? So it could have a rippling effect.
It's already forced a lot of stress on tenant-landlord relationships throughout the Midwest. Peter Gray, Harvest Public Media.
Almost a decade ago, a handful of farmers got together to try to increase the visibility of local food in South Central Indiana and to help each other be more successful. Today, the Local Growers Guild has expanded to 80 grower members, everyone from vegetable farmers and meat producers to those producing value-added products like soaps and flours. Megan Hutchison is the LGG's manager and a farmer herself. It's her job to make connections amongst all these folks and to wrangle the interns and volunteers who make up the majority of the Guild's organizational team. She stopped by the Earth Eats studio last year to talk about the issues facing small and medium-sized farmers in Indiana. It's funny to think that a group that's so visible in the food community in Bloomington has only been around for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So take me back 8 years. How did it start?
Bobby Booz and a small handful of growers who saw a need for supporting each other and also growing new farmers. A lot of farmers are at retirement age right now, and so there was a need to sort of share the knowledge that some of the older folks had with the new farmers that were interested in growing.
You know, I chatted with three, I think, interns and guild members a little bit ago, and this concept of collaboration amongst competitors is something that struck me when I spoke with them. And hearing you talk about how the guild started, again, it's competing farms working together to make the community, the food community, stronger.
Well, I guess it's in the nature of cooperatives. And one of the things that's really nice about our guild is it a little bit harkens back to the kind of rural old times where you help your neighbor out. You know, your tractor's broke down. Well, I can borrow your piece of equipment. You know, I've had that happen at my farm before. Oh, I'll call the guy down the road and he helps me out. It's about building relationships, building community, and so while it's competitive, I still think there's a lot of room for new growers.
you know, I was talking about how visible the local Growers Guild is, but a lot of people, even foodies in the community, don't really know what you do. So tell me some specifics about how you bring people together.
Sure. We support our members through direct support, education, and market connections. So with the direct support, that could mean things like our bulk ordering program. So both community members and our members can participate in this, where we buy seeds, we buy trees, we buy amendments, and then we get a lower cost for all of our members. And then we do things like promotion. So we put out our local growers guide, which is great for consumers, too, that are looking to find a CSA or, you know, who in the community is selling meat. So that is one way. And then we also have education is a huge part of what we do. We do lots of workshops where we'll bring in folks to talk about a certain topic. And then one of my most favorite things about the Guild is our monthly potluck that we do. And we just host it at a member farm. It's a social activity. It's a way for people to touch base in the Guild and then also learn about a certain topic. So we did one 2 months ago on medicinals, and we have one coming up on small hand tools. We also are advocating for small and medium-sized farms. So we look at issues that really affect those constituents.
Before you get away from that, let's actually talk about the issues that are affecting small and medium-sized farmers today.
Oh, gosh.
Where to begin?
A whole nother hour. The Local Growers Guild is working on a food hub to try to increase food in our community. But that can only take us so far. We really need to look at who's in control of food policy in the U.S., and it is controlled by a small number of large agricultural companies that have a lot of funding and control how things work and who gets money and who doesn't. I don't know if you've heard about all the raw milk issues going on. You know, we have a couple grower members in our guild that have been either on the committee or kind of talking publicly about that issue.
Let's get to the food hub then. Let me see if we can together describe what a food hub is. It sounds as though my understanding of it is that farmers and producers come together under this big umbrella organization, combine all of their yields so that consumers like me or restaurants can buy stuff at a lower price in bulk, and that farmers can get their stuff out there to more people. Is that about right?
Yeah. Food hubs have a lot of – they can look really different depending on sort of the model. There's a couple things happening in northern Indiana with the Chicago area. But right now, Bloomington, Indianapolis, Terre Haute, we're all kind of looking at different food hub models. I think what's going to happen is it's going to be a collaboration of a couple food hubs around the state, and we're all going to work together. And the one we're looking at here is to aggregate products from different farms to then, you know, sell to restaurants, sell to eventually hopefully schools, the hospital, and other institutions like IU and down the line. So it's a balancing act of, you know, the growers getting the most bang for their buck, because of course if you sell directly to a consumer you're going to get more money. But if farmers have the opportunity to scale up and distribute produce to restaurants and stores, well, that's great, and that gets more local food into people's kitchens.
So you must be talking to the stores and the restaurants in the area. Mm-hmm. They're on board for this idea?
We work with the Bloomington Independent Restaurant Association, and we've been able to collect some average prices from different restaurants around town to then share that with the growers to see if it's something that will work into their business plan. And one thing that we really want to talk with other folks across Indiana about is that there is definitely room for the state to get involved in food hubs and to help with the infrastructure costs, the capital expenses. A lot of the food hubs across the country have support from their state governments, and so we really would love it if the state would step in with that. Rural development has been amazing, but there's definitely room for economic development to step in as well.
That conversation with Local Growers Guild manager Megan Hutchison from last year. Connect with her and get more information at localgrowers.org. Coming up, a much maligned veggie,
A lot of people think of broccoli just as a side vegetable, you know, something that comes along with a foil-wrapped baked potato and a big chunk of meat. But in Italy, they treat it more as the star of the show.
You'll never look at broccoli the same again after this fantastic recipe from Chef Daniel Orr. Stay tuned. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Rules of food swap. You have to bring something to swap. It has to be homemade. And it would be nice if you listed the ingredients. Then who knows what you could take home with you. Aaron Clark experienced a food swap in Indianapolis and wanted to bring the concept to Bloomington. Earth Eats attended the fourth meeting of the B-Town Food Swappers this month. And we have this audio postcard.
I brought blueberry apple conserves, I brought amaretto cherries, and vanilla rum apple butter.
We have apple cider vinegar, there's also red wine vinegar, homemade stone ground mustard, and I have beer, imperial stouts that I brought along.
We have pimento cheese with some bagel chips next to it. Looks like it's some cheese, pimentos, poblano peppers, mayonnaise, mustard, paprika, scallions, and a little bit of pepper.
Peanut butter and granola bars. They're gluten and dairy-free with peanut butter, maple syrup, cage-free eggs, applesauce, vanilla, organic oats, brown sugar, salt, papaya, pumpkin seed, and sunflower seed.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to the fourth B-Town Food Swap. Most of you have been here before.
My name is Aaron Clark, and I'm the organizer of the B-Town Food Swap.
To welcome you. The purpose of the swap today is to trade homemade items with other people in our community.
I went to a couple of indie food swaps. Loved it. I'm a foodie. I love trying new things and also meeting people, so the food swap combined both of those. After a few swaps in Indy, I felt like it would be a great event to have here in Bloomington.
Some of my large quantities of persimmon pulp for some marzipan I have.
For the first little bit, we all just kind of wander around and chat with each other and see how things are going, catch up, see what people are bringing. And then we have the actual time where we go around and sample. So everyone has the option of bringing little samples. Most people will bring samples. Of course, you couldn't do that for something like bottled beer, but for all the other things, that works great. So you get to go around, try out everything, and then you write down your name on their sheet if that's something that you're interested in. And then you actually go into the swapping and everyone swaps. So we tend to swap the things that you're really, really excited about first, so everyone will kind of go do those, and then you start figuring out what else you might want to do, and eventually it's just kind of, oh, that's leftover, and my thing's leftover, I'll take that, and you can take this, and it all ends up working out.
You have to make something that's homemade. We don't have any requirements other than that. We ask people to list ingredients or maybe state dietary specifications, if it's vegan, if it's sugar-free, etc.
Would you like anything else for some of the vinegars?
Let's do the amaretto black cherry.
You don't have to be an expert cook to come to a swap. You don't have to be an expert canner. You can bring anything that your heart desires, and people will trade with you. Okay, so it's about 10 hours. Everyone can go back and check out your bid sheets. As you're looking at those bid sheets, just remember...
Everyone's really, really friendly and welcoming, so there shouldn't be any fear or anxiety about coming along. And it's also adventurous. So, for instance, I would never do anything on my own accord about persimmon pulp. But it's here, so I might ask, what do you do with persimmon pulp, and learn something new and exciting.
Thanks to Lauren Galapa for that story. Look at photos from the food swap on our website and find out how you can be a part of the next swap at bTownFoodSwappers.com. Chef Jeff Finch gets whole, fresh fish delivered to his restaurant 4 to 5 times a week from his purveyors in Chicago and Louisville. He butchers it in-house to keep it as fresh as possible. He got something a little unusual in the shipment this week.
A fish purveyor called me and he came across a pile of cod cheeks. So we're also going to have a cod cheek special. Literally the cheeks.
The consistency of cod cheeks, he says, is stringy, and he prepared it with panko breadcrumbs over a sushi rice cake. Finch's Brasserie makes basically everything in-house, and they try to buy as many ingredients from local farmers as they can. But if you want to serve good fish in a restaurant in Indiana, there's no choice. You have to fly it in.
Sometimes people complain that the fish is a little expensive, but it is. I agree. Because if it's expensive to us, too. And a lot of times people forget that we are landlocked and that they're flying it here. But it's fun for us, and it ensures that it's the freshest possible product, and that's really important to us, especially with fish.
It's slim pickings from his local farm sources this time of year. He just got a delivery of butternut squash, eggs, and frozen tomatoes and strawberries, which definitely can't fill out a restaurant menu. And they count on their customers to understand that being a restaurant that works with the growing season means their menu sometimes won't include their customers' favorite dishes. Take the mussels, which, well, first of all, this is how they're being served this week.
The preparation right now is a celeriac cream sauce. Celeriac, also known as celery root, is a tuberous vegetable, very similar in taste to celery in the celery family, but it's not as bitter and not as sharp in flavor, and it has a creamier texture. So we sweat the celery root, mix in a little bit of cream, and then puree it all to a really fine consistency, and then strain it. So it has a really nice, fine texture, but also has that celery flavor. But it's a mild celery flavor, so it doesn't overpower the flavor of the mussels. And we also put a little bit of bacon and leeks in there and sweat it all together, and voila.
They source their mussels from Prince Edward Island and the Calendar Islands. You can get them now, but co-owner Candace Finch explains why they took them off the menu for a time last year.
When mussels or any mollusk goes out of season, they do some interesting things. They are a little confused as whether or not they're male or female. So and during that time, it's just a little harder to keep them as fresh as possible. So we rinse them. Right now, we rinse them about 5 times a day. Then we would be rinsing them between 10 and 15 times a day. So really, it's just what they're doing in their world, being free to be them. And we just choose not to to offer them at that time. And we did that for about 3 months this summer. So we heard a lot about that. I had a lot of emails and a lot of phone calls about that because people do love our mussels. But we want to be able to offer the best product we can, and we just didn't feel like it was the best product to offer at that time.
So we went from cod cheeks to mussels. Let's finish off this conversation with scallops. Chef Jeff Finch has some tips for cooking them at home.
Scallops people generally don't cook well at home. And the reason being, I like them pan-seared because it caramelizes the outside and makes them just a touch bitter when the scallop is so sweet and so rich. So I like the play on the bitter sweet. But the problem is, when you sear a scallop at home, you have to get a pan really, really hot. And then you put the scallops in there and you fill your entire house up with smoke, which a lot of people don't like to do, which I don't quite understand. But that's the best way to do it. And to me, it's worth filling your house up with smoke.
Want to see a picture of the gorgeous scallop dish they serve at Finch's Brasserie? Gotta visit our website, eartheats.org.
right, today we're talking broccoli. Yeah. It's a flower, and if you would let this stay on the plant, it would actually sprout little yellow flowers on top of it. But when it gets bigger like this, it's great to cook Italian style. And a lot of people think of broccoli just as a side vegetable, you know, something that comes along with a foil-wrapped baked potato and a big chunk of meat. But in Italy, they treat it more as the star of the show.
The broccoli may be the star on this plate prepared by Chef Daniel Orr, but the sidekicks really make it. Pine nuts, gorgonzola cheese, and anchovies. Okay, you're not an anchovies fan. Try them out on this dish. You might surprise yourself.
We're just going to cut this, each one of these florets, about into quarters or thirds, and we're going to blanch these off. It's where you have boiling salted water, plunge the vegetables into the water, and then you shock it by plunging them from when they're just very lightly cooked from the boiling water into ice water until they're cold all the way through. So we've got our blanched broccoli here. I'm going to take a few basil leaves, get that nice cinnamony, spicy aroma. We're going to put just a little bit of rosemary. Okay, spread that down on the bottom of the pan. Tear the leaves up just a little bit. Okay, then I'm going to lay out my blanched broccoli just kind of in one even layer so it cooks really quickly. Okay, and then I'm going to take a little olive oil. Sprinkle it on top, about a tablespoon of chopped garlic on top, a little bit of my favorite lemon zest, okay, and then up under the broiler. Okay, and since the broccoli is already par-cooked, it's not going to take long. If you're doing this in the summertime and you had the grill going, you could also do this over the grill, take it out to the barbecue, and you can use that as your kind of vegetarian starter if you'd like.
So you're just looking for it to get a little dark on the top?
Yeah, I want it to see that little bit of caramelization, almost a touch of burning. In French, they call it ferré, which means burnt but not burnt.
And they're sweating a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Those little broccoli soldiers are—they're in the heat of battle right now. Okay, so it's probably been about 2 or 3 minutes. Got that little bit of char on them. We're going to put them onto a serving platter. Okay, and then I've got some toppings. And again, this is up to you, whatever you'd like to use. I'm going to put some anchovies, good source of your omega-3s. Just kind of rip them up. A little gorgonzola cheese, Italian blue cheese, some black olives, toasted pine nuts, and a little bit of tomato. Okay, we're going to finish all that off with a little touch of extra virgin olive oil and a good squeeze of some lemon juice. And that's our Tuscan-style roasted broccoli.
Very beautiful dish. See the photo and try the recipe for yourself at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Luann Johnson, Megan Hutchison, Jeff and Candace Finch, Lauren Galapa, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, and everyone at B-Town Food Swappers and Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, providers of therapeutic massage and yoga instruction, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. At the corner of Buick Cadillac Boulevard and Auto Mall Road, one block east of College Mall Road. Touchstone Wellness, massage and yoga. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Bloomington Hypnosis, with certified hypnotist and self-hypnosis instructor John Hunkler, helping clients relax into weight loss for health and fitness. Bloomington Hypnosis, 812-200-5005. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. We love hearing from listeners, so send us a note to eartheats@gmail.com. Thanks for connecting with us today. This is Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.